For Roberta Blake, a trip to jail for returning a rental car late became a cross-country trip to another jail far away in Alabama. For just a moment, Roberta thought, how bad could that be?
When I stepped out of the Ventura jail facility and I looked at the van, I was expecting a bus. And I seen the van, I'm like, where are the restrooms?
Where are the restrooms or windows or seats that recline if we drive all night? Where, above all, were the prison staff uniforms? Roberta was in the custody of a private contractor with the job of transporting prisoners from one facility to another to extradition hearings across the country and back. She's being transported by PTS, the largest contractor by far for the massive prison population in the United States. If business is booming for PTS, Roberta said she couldn't tell that from inside her van.
It was pitch black. I had no clue who was behind me, next to me. I couldn't see anything. And the heat had already started to get to me. And I realized I'm going to be in this van. After I got in is when he said, it's going to be 10 days before we get to Kentucky to continue on to Alabama. And after an hour, I was like, there's no way I can make it 10 days like this. I was handcuffed, shackled together in this small section. I couldn't move. I couldn't turn. I couldn't sleep. And he informed us that every 3 days, they were required to stop at a jail and house us every 3 days.
Even though she was out of jail, Roberta Blake was in a mobile dungeon. She could barely keep track of the time of day, the dates of the month, of the week, from unheated windowless van to unheated windowless holding facility herded by the guards.
They were mean. They didn't care whether we had air conditioning. They didn't care whether we were thirsty. They didn't care if we had to go to the bathroom. If we spoke too loud, they would slam on their brakes and we would get jolted forward. We weren't seatbelted in or anything.
Roberta spent all told 2 weeks in this cramped, sensory-deprived environment. And one more thing. She was surrounded by male prisoners the whole time who were supposed to be segregated, but even that was a joke. A restraint was broken.
They were flirting, derogatory remarks, I mean, very vulgar, and made me very uncomfortable. However, after speaking with them and everybody realizing we're having to deal with this together, we kind of just came together and encouraged each other to get us through to the next stop.
These inmates had to come together, Roberta said, because of moments like these, degrading bathroom breaks with a paper cup in a moving van.
There I am, handcuffed and shackled. They wouldn't undo a cuff. They wouldn't anything. The van is moving, and I honestly had trouble pulling down my pants, and the guy next to me, granted, I'm supposed to be segregated. I'm in the segregation cage. However, they don't put a lock on it. So it was the other inmates were able to open and close it free will. And we had opened it and he pulled my pants down for me. I don't know him from Adam. He pulled my pants down for me as I peed in the cup, then held my cup as I wiped with napkins and gave me my cup back, and kind of the big joke was, don't drop the cup, as he was pulling my pants back up for me. Later, I find out one of the inmates in there was in there for rape.
Roberta's testimony is part of an investigation by the Marshall Project, which confirmed her story. Roberta was eventually convicted of a misdemeanor in Alabama for returning a rental car late, 3 weeks in jail, then back to California on a Greyhound bus. Eli Hager is a reporter for the Marshall Project who spoke with dozens of inmates and guards who had spent time on these private contractor vans.
We're talking about largely 15-passenger vans. Prisoners are crammed in there and they sit upright for days on end with no way to lie down to sleep. They're shackled at the wrists, waist, and ankles. There aren't bathrooms on board. They stop infrequently for bathrooms and food. So those are kind of the general conditions of the vans as they cross state lines.
Is there any regulation for how they're to be treated or how the vans are to be broken in terms of rests, rests for drivers, rests for inmates?
On those aspects of the industry, no, there is not a regulation. There is one law that's supposed to regulate the industry through some broad strokes, but that law is focused on preventing escape. So it says things like if a prisoner escapes, these companies have to notify local law enforcement right away. They have to dress the inmates in brightly colored clothing, some things like that to prevent escapes. But that law has only been enforced one time in the 16 years that it existed.
Now, the idea that a prisoner is not going to have like the wildest time of their life on a journey from one end of the country to the other is not going to find a whole lot of sympathy to some people who are listening. What do you say here about these conditions and how they don't meet a test that you think is appropriate and relevant?
Well, I would say a number of things. First of all, it's important to know that a number of the people on these vans have not yet been convicted of any crime,
right?
Because they're being brought to face charges. So these are people that are not convicted, although they are sitting on the van next to convicted murderers and convicted rapists, and they're all mixed together, and there's no organization by charge. So I think that's an important point that a lot of people understand. And I also think that there are more humane ways to do this. The business model is such that these van companies are driven to pack the vans with as many people as possible since they're paid per prisoner. And they're also incentivized to drive at all hours through the night for days on end because they're paid by the mile by the jurisdictions.
And these individuals who haven't been convicted of a crime are not in the custody of the state. They're in the custody of a private company.
They're in the custody of a private company, correct. And that raises a lot of jurisdictional questions. If there needs to be an investigation of an incident on one of the vans or accountability after the fact, there's a lot of finger pointing because Alabama will say, well, that was California's prisoner. And California will say, well, that was Alabama's prisoner. And they're crossing state lines. So it's in this kind of black hole of oversight and accountability.
How unusual is this story in your investigation?
It's actually not as unusual as it sounds. We spoke to a lot of people who had been on these vans, and we spoke to even more guards of these vans who acknowledged that things that Roberta had to do, such as urinating in cups and bottles in front of the other prisoners, very common from what we heard from talking to over 50 guards, and other things like the terrible heat and no ventilation or air conditioning, very common from what we heard by speaking to insiders, and even the conditions between men and women on the same van, something that we heard repeatedly from people we spoke with.
Eli Hager is a reporter for the Marshall Project. As for Roberta Blake, after her experience with PTS, she would probably take a stationary prison any day of the week, but mostly she never thought a Greyhound bus trip home would feel so good.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.